There are many parents and even teachers are going to relate to this when I talk about children who keep listening to the same line of their favorite movie over and over and over again, keep rewinding and watch it again, rewind and watch it again, or their favorite verse in a song and they just have it on a loop continuously. You're just listening to the same line over and over again. You're just about to lose your mind. We all go through this after a while. It's like enough. And it's disruptive. A lot of the times we will see it as a disruptive behavior. But what if I told you this was actually a way for your child to communicate? Not only that, but it's also a way for you to find out what your child is trying to tell you, how your child feels, and it could also help you prevent meltdowns. This is what we're going to talk about today. We'll be talking about gestalts. It's very common in autistic children. It shows up in everybody, but we're specifically going to be talking about autistic children as well. So that's what we're talking about today. For those who don't know me, my name is Danielle C. Baker. I am the founder and CBO of Being Connected. And I'm also a registered early childhood educator with over 20 years' experience in the field. I help parents and teachers navigate the realities of what parenting is today. But don't get it twisted. When you work with me, we put the child's needs first. So we're going to have to put our ego and pride aside, and let's get to it. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the Talk to Danielle podcast. I am your host, Danielle C. Baker. And before we get started, be sure to like, follow, and subscribe to whichever channel you're listening or watching from. And I just wanted to kind of say we're 3 months into season three. I've had some amazing guests come on and talk about various topics. So I do encourage you to look back at some of the previous episodes to see if anyone speak to you. The same with season two. We've had quite a lot of amazing guests come on with great topics. So again, if you wanted to have a look at that, I'm sure you'll find an episode that will resonate with you. So I encourage you to do that. And today we're going to be talking about gestalts and gestalt language processing. So it's a pretty intense topic to be talking about. And it can get very complicated very fast. So I'm going to keep it simple. I'm going to keep it straight to the point. Gestalts, a lot of people kind of figure this is a newer thing, especially when it comes to autism. But we've been using the term since the 1970s, the 1980s. So it has quite a lot of extensive research. We're just using it a little bit more now. But there's, like I said, it can get very vague. So I'm going to break it down today in today's episode with what a gestalt is, so you can understand what that is, what that represents in terms of your child's development, what it can do, how you can use it, and how you can actually use it to help your child learn more in terms of communication skills. Not only that, but I like to go on a little further and talk about behavioral triggers. And so these gestalts can actually help you see how your child is feeling in that particular moment. So it could kind of help you determine if your child is happy, if they're in pain, if they're not comfortable. And these are signs that can actually lead up to meltdowns or shutdowns, even. So you can actually use that to your advantage and prevent these. So it's very useful at home, very useful in the classroom. We just have to be paying attention. But what you have to understand about gestalts is it is a way to communicate. It's different from what our analytical way of speaking, but it is a way to communicate, just like any other language, just like sign language. So we need to accept that and see it as a language and work with it. So what happens with gestalts, I'll jump right in, is it emphasizes the importance of understanding the whole rather than focusing on the individual components. So this is not just for language, it's for everything. It's understanding how one thing works all together with all the parts, as opposed to just the parts individually. And then putting them together as a whole. So what I like to use as an example is a motor, right? usually we'll study all of the different parts of the motor and then how you put it together and how they will all work together to keep a car running or to keep a something else running. When you're working with gestalts, it's actually we understand how the entire motor works. And then we just learn to break it down into individual parts. So it's quite the opposite. And that does make a huge difference, especially when it comes to language skills, because children who are Gestalt language processors understand the interaction and the organization of the whole thing, as opposed to analyzing it separately. So when we're talking about language, when we first learn to speak, we learn words. And then we learn to put some words together to make a little short phrase or sentence that work, that makes sense together. And then we break those apart and put them together with other words. And then we add our words to make full sentences. And then that's how you get your communication skills. When you're talking about Gestalt language processing, you have an entire phrase together, already formed. And then eventually you learn to break down into words. And then you learn to use those words to use it in a different sentence to make a different meaning with it. So it's quite complex and it's quite impressive, to be honest, that a child learns like that already. It takes so long. A lot of the reading and writing challenges that we see in schools is because children are not able to put those words together or put meaning to a word. Meaning to another word and then put them together to create a different meaning. In this case, the child comes with that meaning already. The challenge is breaking down those words and using them into di with different words to have different meanings. So you understand how this can be a little confusing because just trying to explain it can be a little confusing. So the brain, when it comes to Gestalt principles, and I'll go over the principles a little bit, but when it comes to Gestalt principles, is how the brain organizes sensory inputs into meaningful wholes. Now, not wholes like a whole, but whole, the entire thing. So your brain is already processing the thing as an entity, a complete entity. In terms of language, you learn a language by memorizing and using whole phrases or sentences, rather than the individual words or using grammatical rules. So that's what language processing is for Gestalts. Although this episode is going to be solely about, mostly about language, I will kind of break down how it shows up everywhere else. So one of the Gestalt principle is the proximity. So this basically means that if certain things are close to each other, then they're part of a group. That's kind of how the Gestalt principle works. So a child could see people, let's say you're at the store and you see people kind of standing together or waiting in line. Usually a child would just see the individual person, but not make sense that, oh, they're in a line waiting for something. A child that uses Gestalt processing will know automatically. They'll look at the line at the cash and automatically, this is a group. They already have that connection. In terms of similarity, that's another principle. Then you're looking at elements that share visual characteristics, and they will group those together. So it could be in terms of size, it could be color. This is something that you learn in grade one and grade two, where we teach in math, grade one and two, to have like the similar, the same, make groups of colors, small, medium, large. We have to teach children that. It's starting in grade one. We'd start earlier, but in the curriculum, grade one is where we really break it down. Children that use the Gestalt language processing already know that. So this is where you can see some behavioral issues at school because they already get that. And they don't understand why other people don't get it. They were born with it, so they're bored. They're not having, they're not. It's not a challenge. It's not behavioral challenges. They're just bored out of their minds. But because they're not necessarily able to express it, we just think that they are just acting up, basically. There's also another principle is continuity. And this is where it gets very interesting because they will see lines and shape as continuous, even if they're cut up. So if you have a line then a gap, and another line. A child is using a Gestalt processing, sees the whole line, and that'll go to infinity. If you have a shape that's cut in half, let's say, they will see it as a whole. Most children, when they see pieces of a puzzle, they won't know what the actual image is on the puzzle until the puzzle is put all together. A child that uses Gestalt processing already knows what the image looks like. And that's where it gets interesting before I move on to the other principles, is that in terms of the continuity principle, this is where why often autistic children, or not just children, autistic people, or even people, some people with ADHD will cut you off mid-sentence and continue on with the conversation. Now, you may perceive that as rude, but the thing is, because of that continuity principle, they already know what you're going to say at the end of your sentence. They've already seen it. It's a continuous line. They already know where you're getting at. So they're just moving on because their mind is going somewhere else with it. So keep that in mind when you have autistic children or many neurodivergent people will cut you off mid-sentence. It may seem like it's rude to you, but it's just part of how their computer works, how their operating system works. They already know what you're going to say. They're going to move on. So it hurts the ego a little bit when you realize that I'm a little too slow for this person, but that's the reality of it. It's just as frustrating to them. There's also closure as another principle where the mind completes incomplete figures and shapes. So again, like I was mentioning earlier, if you draw a circle but you leave some lines out, a person that uses Gestalt processing will actually be able to complete that. They'll be able to tell you what that is. So when you have games where you have a picture, and then you just like put a piece of the picture where there's like an ear, and then you put another piece in another corner that's a foot. For analytical children, they will need more pieces to figure out that it's a teddy bear, let's say. But the children that are using Gestalt processing will already know it's a teddy bear. So it's very interesting. There are more principles with Gestalt. I invite you to learn more about it. You can just search it up. Very interesting. The other interesting thing is using the principles is not actually going to help you help the child. We're going to go into that. It's very complex. So using Gestalt principles to help a child develop their language skills is not actually necessarily going to help. There's not enough evidence to show. Actually, there's no evidence that shows that it will help. So it gets very complex. It's really the way I see it is, it's just to help us understand what's going on with the child or with the person. So keep that in mind. So when it comes to languages, we're really going to break it down to language. I'll throw in a little bit of the socializing and emotional effect that, the emotional development as well. But in languages, a child that has a Gestalt language processing will learn the language in chunks of phrases, chunks of sentences, full sentences even. So we have to recognize that scripting and echolalia is a form of communication, and that is very crucial because that is the way they communicate. It is a language on their own. You have to use them as clues as well to find out what your child's interests and needs are. So in the case of nonverbal children, it is the scripting, it is the repeated sounds that they make that are is going to give you clues as to what they need, what they like, what is triggering them as well. So we have to play the detectives on that and figure out what your child is actually saying. They are communicating with our analytical, neurotypical ears. We just think they're making noise or they're just repeating the same phrase over and over again and we're going crazy over it. But you have to understand your child is talking to you. So we need to be listening. We just have to listen differently than what we're used to. And of course, just like everything else, to make it even harder, every child is different. So the scripting that a child uses, the echolalia that a child does, will be completely different from one child to another and will mean different things for one child to another. So if you figured out the scripting and the echolalia for one child, it's not going to be the same for the other. So it's just lot more fun for us to work with. Not all, this is another thing too, not all autistic children use our Gestalt language processors. Some of them are analytical language processors. So that makes it even more difficult. There is no testing that can be done to determine whether a child is a Gestalt language processor or an analytical language processor. So it is all down to just observing, watching the patterns, and then you'll be able to determine yourself whether or not they are in the Gestalt side or the analytical side. So you really have to pay attention to the patterns. Echolalia is something that could be, I think, annoys people the most because it's just that continuous sound, that repeated word. A lot of the times it is because the child is happy. They're in their happy place. They are repeated. For some reason, that word just makes them feel good. So they will repeat it and repeat it and repeat it. So it's usually a good sign that the child is happy. Pay attention to what's happening. Pay attention to what just happened. Pay attention to the people that they are around when they are using the echolalia. And just look at the whole context. Look at what they're playing with. Look at the toys. You're going to know what it is that makes them happy. You're going to know what interests them. If you notice that there's echolalia more often when they're with dinosaurs or with trains or unicorns, then you'll know that that's their interest and you can use that to help them learn a little bit more. I'll talk about it later. So it's not only just to show you what they like, how they're feeling. But it's also a way for them to process the words, the sounds, the combination of the letters, combination of the words. If they're using more than one word, they're making sense of it. Because if again, they're learning the full sentence and then they have to learn to break it down to words, and then they gotta learn to use those words with other words to make different sentences. So it's the opposite of what we do. So if we're stopping that because we're annoyed by the fact that they keep saying jello bean, jello bean, jello bean, jello bean, jello bean, and we cut it, we're actually cutting their learning. They're learning something and we're cutting that right now. So that's what we need to pay attention to. For scripts, sometimes it looks familiar, but scripts is usually when they're listening to something. They're not creating the sounds. They're listening again, like I mentioned in the intro, that one part in the movie that they keep rewinding, or that one verse in a song that they keep playing on the loop. So it offers insight on their interests. That's where you will see this. So when they're listening to the movie and they keep rewinding that same part, pay attention to what's happening. Pay attention to what they're doing. Pay attention to the people they're around with. Pay attention to what they're playing with. So that, or pay attention to what happened just before they started watching the clip, so that you have a really good view of what is making them happy. It's not necessarily happy. Sometimes they're using it to self-soothe. So something's bothering them, and they're using that to calm down. It's comforting for them. So pay attention to that. What may have triggered them? They might also be telling you that they're on the verge of a meltdown. So pay attention. Is there too much light? Is there too much sound? Is there too much movement? Are they tired? Are they hungry? All that fun stuff that you need to figure out. There's actually six stages to Gestalt processing. From when I was taught, learning that chunk of words, breaking it down, recognizing the individual word. And so I'm not going to go over those. It's actually shown that it doesn't help us in terms of helping the child develop those learned language skills if we know the six stages, but it is very important. So it starts from echolalia is the first stage, and it goes all the way up to complex language skills. So there's six processes there that we can look and see where the child is, but it doesn't necessarily help us in getting the child to communicate in a more functional language. There is, so this is where it gets interesting. There's some evidence that would show that the motor planning and the sensory regulation issues will affect the language skills and the language patterns in a child. So we know that with autistic children, they often have motor skills or challenges with their motor skills, and their sensory in overload sensitivities, if I could say. There appears to be a kind of a correlation with the language skills. So if they are struggling with their motor skills, somehow that is related to the language skills as well. So before I move on to how you can help your child develop functional language skills, I am going to put a plug here because it is important for me to go over how you can help your child communicate in a way that you will understand and how we can meet their needs. But I do have to say, this is my personal opinion working with children over the years, especially in the school setting. I think taking a child that already has unique language skills, they have their own language, they speak their own way. We're just the ones who don't understand them. Let's make that clear. We're forcing them to dissect the way that they communicate into the bases, the basics, which is words, and then rebuild that into another language that we can understand. I think that's wrong. It's necessary, but that is definitely not the right way of doing it. I will give an example of French is my first language. I learned to speak English when I was 12 years old, I think, is when I started to learn. So it is a whole complex thing where I'm going to use myself as an example, but I've learned my words, put them together, gave it another meaning, and I put them all in the right order for French. And then now you're learning an English language where somebody speaks to you. You got to make sense of their words. You got to make sense of that connection according to their grammatical rules. Then your brain has to translate that. And put them into words in French grammatical rules to make sense and to still mean the same thing that the person told you. And then for your answer, you're formulating the words, putting them together to make a sentence that makes sense. In the French language, you got to translate that into English. Again, break down the words, put them in order according to the English grammatical rules, and then spit it out. It's complex. Now, when you're used to it, your brain just does it automatically. But for anybody who speaks more than one language, you will know that when you're tired, when you're upset, when you just the words don't come out right. Now you get, people make fun of you. You get reprimanded for it. If you're as a child, you get reprimanded for it. You get told that you're not good at speaking a different language. So anybody again that speaks more multiple languages understands this concept. So we're asking children to do the same here. They have their own language. We don't understand that language, but we're asking them to learn a different language, to break down their language, to reconstruct it into a different language, and then expect them to do it properly. And if they don't, then we belittle them, we embarrass them, we tell them they're no good. Unintentionally, of course, hopefully. So of course it's going to be frustrating for them because why aren't you speaking their language, right? I used to, when I was little, learning English, I was so self-conscious about not making a mistake and so self-conscious of what people will think of my accent or how I mispronounce some words. And I would get so frustrated when people would start, basically saying that I am not that smart because I don't know how to speak in the second language properly. And I eventually got upset, and people would kind of push that. I would just start speaking to them in French. And in my mind, I was like, listen, I've been accommodating you this entire time. I've been doing all the work this entire time. Now you do it. Right. So it's the same for children, autistic children, especially for nonverbal children who are expected to speak somehow. And they don't speak the same language. So, yes, it is frustrating. And yes, we will trigger meltdowns for it. So, well, we have to be careful how we approach it. We need to change the way that we approach it. They are communicating. We're just so focused on the verbal language that we forget all the nonverbal languages that come with it. So we need to switch that in terms of education and how we see it. It's very important because it is a language in itself. It's just like sign language. We've learned to accept that as an actual language. We do really recognize that people that can't hear do need to communicate, and they do communicate. We just created the sign language so that the hearing people would feel more comfortable. But it's the same in terms of nonverbal or in terms of the way that the autistic community will speak. If they are verbal, we need to recognize that. So we do have to recognize that it is a form of communication, echolalia, scripting. It is a form of communication. They are clues for us to figure out what the child's interests are, what their needs are, and what their triggers are, what's really bothering them. And we do, again, because not all autistic children are the same, we do need to play the detectives on that. I'll give you an example of how complex it can be to play the detective because I worked with a child back in the day. I say that often lately, but back in the day when Caillou was a big TV show for kids, there was an episode where Caillou's tooth was hurting, and it's a whole thing about it. And there was a child who often would say in the daycare, "Caillou's tooth, Caillou's tooth, Caillou's tooth." So it was like an echolalia here. Caillou's tooth, Caillou's tooth, Caillou's tooth, Caillou's tooth. So we were just like, okay, yeah, Caillou. We knew he liked Caillou. But we realized later on that he would say Caillou's tooth in different contexts for us to realize that he associated Caillou's tooth to pain. So whenever he was in pain, he didn't know the word for pain. So he would say Caillou's tooth. He understood that Caillou was in pain in the episode when his tooth was hurting. And so it wasn't just necessarily when his teeth were hurting, but anytime he was hurting somewhere, he would say Caillou's tooth. So this is how complex it can be. It is a beautiful language. When you think about it, it's very poetic. It's a beautiful language when you get to know the language. So I think it's important for us, especially as adults who will be helping those children, to make an effort to learn that beautiful language. What we have found, we're going to get into the learning stuff. So for gestalt language processors, the people who learn in chunks of words, it has been found that they can benefit from the AAC systems, and AAC is for augmentative and alternative communications. So we're talking about visual aids. We're talking about picture boards, sign language, any speech generative devices like a tablet. Sometimes, most of the time, we use tablets for them to say their words. So they do benefit from that because it is a consistent way of communicating. And that works very well with the children with autism. So it will complement the scripting, what they're used to already. They will complement the echolalia, which they're used to already. So it does work. Use visuals, use the devices to help them communicate, especially for nonverbal children. Just because they don't speak doesn't mean they have nothing to say, right? Imagine if you lost the ability to speak, all of a sudden you would get frustrated as well when you're trying to communicate something that's not going right for you, but you can't, and nobody's getting what you're trying to say. So keep that in mind. It will help. So the ACC systems work very well with children to teach them how to use a functional language, so that they can communicate their needs better, they can communicate their feelings, and they can socialize a bit more as well. What can we do to help our children learn functional language? Again, it could take various forms. For me, functional language is not just the spoken word, but at least to be able to convey, not have to figure out what Caillou's tooth means, but to actually say pain can kind of save us some time and prevent a meltdown. So the first thing you do need to do, and even though it is disruptive, honor the gestalts. They are talking to you. Even a couple, take a couple of Tylenols, a couple of Advils, take an energy drink if you have to, and just lean into it. Honor the gestalts, embrace them. Just know that the child is communicating with you. But it also it validates and encourages the child to communicate more, right? If you're actually encouraging their gestalts, if you are embracing it, they will want to communicate with you more. Because if they're constantly being told that they're not doing it right, they're just going to shut down. They're not going to want to communicate with you anymore. I'm like, forget that. Just like when I used to start speaking French and say, okay, you figure it out now. That's basically what will happen. We're all human, right? Just because we're not speaking verbally doesn't mean that we're not human. You need to model the functional language. So use the scripts, use the echolalia, but use it in different contexts. So again, don't forget, we have to break it down and use those words with other words that they're not familiar with to create other meanings, sorry. So use the scripts, use the echolalias to help them expand on their vocabulary or on the way that they communicate in different ways. It just helps them break down the words and see the other components as well. Use visual script support, sorry, use visual support. It is so important. It helps tremendously for any child, not just autistic children, but visuals do help in not just pictures like the picture boards and stuff like that, but gestures can help as well, especially for nonverbal, clearly. And those use those devices and get the children, encourage them to keep using, because sometimes they're not going to want to use it. They might be walking around with their tablet, but they just can't be bothered. They all have their days just like we do. You just can't be bothered to use a tablet. So encourage them to say, listen, I'm having a hard time understanding this one. Can we please use the device so that I will know for next time that this is what you mean. So show them that you are interested in learning their language. Okay. Engage in their favorite activities. So that means use their interests to motivate language. Get in there with them. Now, of course, they don't play the same necessarily. When we're talking about autistic children, they will do mostly parallel play. So don't expect to start playing board games with them and having a full conversation, but sit next to them. Parallel play, and you describe what you're doing or describe what they're doing. Some days they'll take it, some days they'll shush you, some days they'll tell you to go away because they want to be in their little bubble. You have to honor that as well. But when they're open to it, when they're receptive to it, use their interests to get them to interact with you a little bit more. And if they are verbal, get them to explain what they're doing or ask them questions. Show them that you're interested in what they're doing. They may never stop talking, and that's okay. At least you're working on their social skills and their language skills as well. And don't overload. This is the most important thing. Don't overload them with language, practices, and don't. It's too much. Just like everybody else, after a while, you're just like, okay, that's enough. Don't forget that language skills for them is just like the challenges they have with their motor skills. So it requires more energy. It requires more concentration, and they will tire faster because it's strenuous for them. So keep it clear, keep it concise, and keep it simple for them so that they don't get discouraged. How do you support your child? I do want them to kind of work on their functional language skills. Work with professionals. Always very helpful. We're talking about people who have years and years and years and years of experience and knowledge on this subject. Dr. Google is really nice. It can help us, but it's not enough. Like I said, every child is different. Every gestalt means different things for different children. So you by yourself trying to figure that out. We have doctors who worked with hundreds or specialists who work with hundreds of children. They could tell you, okay, but this doesn't work. This might work. This might work. This might work. And then that will help you. And it'll help your child as well. Because if you can eliminate frustrations in yourself when you're trying to help your child, that will help your child as well. Because your child will pick up on your frustrations and they'll think it's their fault. So they're going to shut down a little bit more. Be very patient and observant. You need to really look at how your child, not how you think that they interact or how you think they're processing something. Pay attention, look at the clues, and then use those clues to use in different contexts. So it'll help your child kind of expand that knowledge as well. Encourage the breakdown of the gestalts. So because the gestalts are like chunks of words that they need to kind of break down into little words, the individual words, and then put those words, encourage the breakdown. So if they're saying the same sentence over and over again, try to break it down into smaller chunks and then smaller and smaller. So you could do that as well. Promote social interactions. I think that is one of the most important things to do. They can only learn through practice, so that their own little bubble at home on their devices, they're not going to practice. And if you're at home on your devices, you're not encouraging interactions either. So be present when you're with them. Put the device away for yourself. If your child needs a device to speak, the device needs to stay there. So you be present, right? Not on your phone or not talking to other people. Be present with them. I know that social interactions can be very stressful for parents because you're afraid of how your child is going to be perceived. You're afraid of how your child is going to interact with others. What if they have a breakdown? What if they hit somebody? What if they bite somebody? What if, what if, what if, what if, what if? What I can recommend is those are very well-founded concerns. So just know that it's absolutely normal. And that just means you are a great parent. If you're worried about how your child is going to be seen, it means you care. So good for you. Give yourself a good tap on the back. You did good, right? But what I would recommend, especially as they're getting older, it is important to have those social interactions. It's a muscle they need to work. So go with their interests. Again, those echolalias and those scripts are going to tell you what they love. And if you can get them into groups that share the same interest, the same obsession, already there, they're going to want to go. And the pressure is off because now they have something in common with the other people around them. So if you're going to get them into a group, into a program, if you know that they love computers, get them into a coding class. Now everybody that's going there likes coding, right? So find through their scripts and their echolalias, they're already telling you what they like. And if they're obsessed with birds, go to a bird watching walk. So many different events going on, and most of them are free as well. Get into the library. Sometimes they have workshops as well for certain things, and during summers, March breaks, and all of that fun stuff. So if you are going to get them into groups or into programs, find what they love so that they already have something in common with the people that they're going to be interacting with that encourages them to stay active socially. So this is what I'm going to leave you with. It's very broad. There's a lot to take in. There's so much that I could break down into, but just know that that thing that keeps driving you crazy at home, and they're just constantly listening to the same thing, or you're hearing the same noise, and your eyes starting to twitch, and you're about to lose your mind. Just know that your child is communicating with you. Is pretty much the equivalent of the mom thing, right? So if you're listening to that same song over and again, just know it's their equivalent of mom, 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 mommy, mommy, mommy. It's the same thing. So that can help you kind of digest it a little bit more. Just know that it'll pay attention to what they're doing while they're doing it, the sounds or the words. Pay attention to what they're doing when they're listening to that song on a loop or that video clip on a loop. And pay attention to what happened before. Pay attention to what you're getting yourself ready for. They will show you their anxiety. They will show you their fears. They will show you what's bothering them, so you can prevent meltdowns as well. So, and communicate with them. They are hearing you. Even if they're nonverbal, they can still hear you. They can still talk. They just don't talk the way we expect them to. So keep that in mind. And again, embrace the fact that the child is speaking in that language. It's a beautiful thing. It's just like any other languages. Embrace it and take the time to learn some of those languages. It's a great experience for you as well. It will help you understand the child much better. As a parent, it will help you communicate so much better with the schools as well, because I know communications is a challenge with the schools when it comes to autistic children. But if you come with all of that information, it helps the teachers so much more to be able to address your child's needs. So keep that in mind. And if you have any questions, don't hesitate to contact me. I am a real person. I will reply. And if you need more resources, I can also direct you in the right direction. But don't forget to ask for help. You can't do this alone. You're doing everything already. So get people who know so much on the topic that can help you. So I will leave you with that. Don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe with whichever channel you're listening or watching from. And don't forget to check out the other episodes. There's something there I'm sure that will interest you as well. And until next time, stay safe, stay awesome, and we'll talk soon.